There's a word that is another word in the Tibetan, in Buddhist vocabulary, which I haven't used much before, which I sort of come upon recently. I've known about it, but I haven't really thought about what it meant. And the word is viveka, V-I-V-E-K-A. Anybody know that word? It's not common. The first time I encountered this word was many years ago when a friend of mine, a fellow Dharma practitioner, showed me this book called Citta Viveka, a little book written by Ajahn Sumedho. And it was a sort of an accounting of teachings through the experience of his beginning to teach in the monastery in England, which was the first Western monastery that Ajahn Chah sent the monks. So he, who'd been there in Thailand with Ajahn Chah, was now to open up this vihara in England, and Chithurst Monastery. Has anybody been to Chithurst Monastery in England? Anyway, he wrote this book about what it was like, and the growing sangha there, and the book was called Citta Viveka, and I really liked the way he taught. This is my first encounter with Ajahn Sumedho, whom I subsequently met and studied with a little. Anyway, I've got this book. He showed me a book, but you can't buy books produced by monks because they're not sort of on the big list. You can't get them through Amazon or anything. And so I went into the secondhand bookshop. It was one of those weird things in Vancouver. And I went in and I kind of looked towards the spiritual section. This was many years ago, so it was just one section. It wasn't like divided into the millions of categories that we have now for all the spiritual self-help sections. But anyway, it wasn't a big bookshop. I walked straight to this shelf and I walked straight to this book. And it was like, you know, it's a tiny little book. It's less than a centimeter across. And I just put my hand in and pulled it out. And there it was. Like that. It was like sort of magic little book. So that was my, and I love that book and I like the teachings of it. Citta Viveka. There is a chapter in there called Letting Go. And often teachers will have quoted, I'm sure you will have heard many times, or some of you will have heard, a quote by Ajahn Sumedho about letting go. We who have this poverty-stricken practice, we're not Tibetans with all kinds of elaborate rituals of gods and deities and things, and we don't have a lot of form or anything magical. We just have this simple practice, let go, let go, let go, like earthworms. All we have to say to ourselves is, let go. Anyway, that quote and that whole chapter on letting go is in that book. And I remember reading that and appreciating that. Turns out that Citta Viveka, the title of the book, Viveka, means three things. It means seclusion, or detachment, or singleness. This sounds like I'm lisping in this particular microphone, but I don't have a lisp. Do I sound like I'm lisping to you?
No.
Which is my ear. Okay. The skill of withdrawing attention from the complexities of the world for the sake of simplification. The skill of withdrawing. This is the relinquishing. This is the letting go of withdrawing. Otherwise, survival mind, from getting entangled in the things which it thinks it needs to get together to survive. There are two here in this translation. Viveka, kaya viveka, K-A-Y-A. K-A-Y-A means often form or body. This means taking the body to a quiet, simple place for the sake of meditation. So right now, this, we're doing kaya viveka. We're in this quiet room. There's no other TVs on in the background and people ordering drinks and laughing, and it's quiet. So there's a protection, a singleness, a withdrawing, physically. But then there's Citta Viveka, the name of that book, which means withdrawing the mind from its preoccupations. So when you go on retreat, you're doing both Citta and Kaya Viveka by withdrawing and going away from the physical stimuli and also the mental activities and responsibilities that stimulate the typical, you know, normal survivor mind to be busy. So, as we all know who've done any meditation at all, practicing meditation, training the mind in present awareness, in mindfulness, is what we do to encourage and support an inner calming, an inner quiet. We know that's the basic thing about meditation. But this particular aspect of what we do as we meditate, this withdrawing from stimulus, is what I want to focus on. So just for, I'm going to take 3 minutes. You all are meditators, at least most of you are meditators. Some of you may not be, so you'll be able to manage 3 minutes. 3 minutes, I'd like you to, now, just close your eyes. You don't have to do anything special with your posture or anything. Close your eyes. Withdraw your attention, mostly from me. And come inside your own self sitting there. Notice your body sitting there. In this room. And with your eyes closed, sense the room around you. Make a sense of the proportion of the height of the ceiling and of the walls. And we can feel the simpleness of this room and the quiet, whatever little sounds there are. We're aware that there are people around us. And we can feel the position our body's in sitting there. We can check around and scan around the body for, make sure it's comfy. And there's places that are sore. If you've got any kind of aches or pains or tensions, you can notice them. And now I won't say anything for the next minute and a half. Keep doing exactly what I said. Don't do anything else with your mind. A little meditation, deliberately attempting to do just those few things and nothing else. Did anyone succeed 100%? Knowing other than just your body sitting here, there's one of you, it's a pretty reasonable number, who didn't have your mind do anything else, even though that was very short, and even though you knew what to do and I told you what to do, you couldn't do it. Because your mind goes off doing a few other things at the same time. A little planning, a little shopping, a little something else, fussing or worrying or whatever else you did. But you didn't mean to, but it did it anyway, didn't it? What we're learning in meditation is, what is it that does that? Why does the mind do these other things? What's it doing? Why is it doing it? What's it like when it does it? And can we not do it? Can we let go of these impulses or urges or fascinations or worries or habits to do something else other than just be here, simply in this room, safe in here, it's friendly in here, it's pleasant in here, it's easy in here, you don't have to worry or plan or shop or, you don't have to do any of those things, but you did it. Because why? You're interested in something else, you're concerned about something else. It's a habit. The mind just does many things. It's very good at doing many little things. It's not very good at not doing many little things, at doing simple things, quietly, consistently, in a sustained way. It's not good at that. And the younger you are, I'm looking at ones back there, the younger you are, the harder it is to do. At least I don't know about that. The younger you are, your generation, there's so much rapid stimulus compared to even when I was your age, and well, my grandparents, they didn't even have TVs. You know, you had to wait a long time to get a letter in the mail. You didn't get an instant message. You know, and when you read a page of something, you had just that one page. You didn't have 10,000 things all around the edges beeping at you. It was very much more straightforward. And it took a long time to get Oscar, because you just had labor-saving machinery to help you. So cleaning the silver was a while. You know, doing the laundry was all day Monday, for instance, for my mom. And so we had a slower, we had a sort of a whole, the whole way of doing any task was lengthy. There's a program at the moment on a television, I've watched it, and it's something about Tudor monastery village life. So it's like the 14 and 1500s, and it's how to make a floor. You know, and you have to dig up the chalk, and then you have to heat the chalk in a fire, but you have to build the fire and lug the logs and make the fire, and then it has to get really hot, and it takes a long time. And then you dig this now hot chalk, and you put it in water, and you have to wait a long time for the water to soften it so it becomes mushy like clay. And then you have to take it and mix it with ash, and then you have to squish it with some manure, that's right, the horse manure part, and then you have to spread it all over the floor like clay, and then eventually it sets. The whole procedure takes about 2 weeks, for instance. You don't just call up the guy and they come in, boom, and then you've got a floor. So the work of everything is coming so rapid comparatively that I'm sure our minds are getting even more able to be quick and do rapid activities. And then there are video games. I have in my family somebody who's interested in electronic video gaming. And there's a whole, I don't know if any of you know this, but certainly my generation, I was amazed. There's a whole new sport where people go to arenas and watch competitors compete, video games competing, and they're all there in the audience, thousands and thousands of people, and they'll bet on who will win. And some of the best players are Korean, for one thing, but there's an American woman from New York, and she can do, and she's really up in the top 10 in the world, something like 300 adjustments, movements, thought adjustments, strategies in a minute. Like incredibly, intensely fast. The faculty, our ability to be really fast is extraordinary. But in meditation, we're learning the opposite. And so I have empathy with people whose lives are around a lot of stimulus that's coming in really quickly, because you're going to, it's another whole thing to be able to slow down. But what we're attempting in this idea of relinquishing is to the urge to keep jumping to something else. And there's an urge for that. As you sit here quietly, and I suggested you notice these few things, something wants something else. Maybe just over here it'll be more interesting. Maybe if I just plan a little bit, something else. We don't just do it. The mind doesn't just do it. It believes that it will improve things if it does something else. A little bit more of this. Oh, I must remember to do such and such, and then tomorrow will be a little better because I won't fill in the blanks. We believe in our ability to improve situations by thinking of all these different options. Or sometimes we believe that we can figure something out that's a problem and think our way out of it. A lot of that urge is from avoidance, or a lot of the urge is from wanting. Greed and hatred are basic teachings of the Buddha. But we believe that we will improve the situation if we do this thing. And we believe that so strongly that we are compelled to do that, whatever that is, in the mind. So what we're asked to do in meditation is to see through that belief and release that belief. And come to learn, which we don't do very easily, that without doing that, whatever that was you were doing, planning or thinking or shopping, whatever you were doing, many things you were doing, you weren't doing just one thing, you were doing a lot of things. But if you don't do those things and you just stay simply in this room quietly, that you will be just as okay. In fact, you will be more okay. We don't believe it. If you really believed that, you wouldn't be doing other things sitting here for 3 minutes. We don't believe the effectiveness of quietening the mind. We really believe that, you know, if we can get really smart and clever and think of all our strategies, that will be what's us. And that's what we're asked to not believe, at least to question. Not to say it's wrong off the top, but to question that. It's an assumption. But it's run our lives because it's the belief that the separate sense of self mind operates under. It's how it operates. It's its programming.